Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. This week, we're going to be talking about a tough topic. We're going to be talking about radical feminist analysis of gender, and we're going to be talking about confronting sexism on the left. And as somebody who's on the left, I can tell you that sexism and misogyny exists, as you will hear in this interview. My guests are Cheryl Byron, Lisa Blank, and Anita Stewart, and I'm going to let them tell you about themselves when we come back. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with this week's edition of Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Cheryl Byron, Lisa Blank, and Anita Stewart, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Okay, so this is a very special edition of Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I don't usually have multiple guests because it kind of, especially over the phone, because people kind of interrupt each other and it's hard to focus on what's happening. But I wanted to have you three on because you all are addressing an issue that is very important. It's not a narrow issue to me. It's an issue that is widespread. It's been happening since the beginning of time, and you all are doing it in such a educated and informative way that I think, like my sister Dee Dee Miller, who we all know, and she's suffering from cancer. She says that you guys might be too smart for everybody to understand what you're trying to do. But I'm talking about what my friend Mickey Zazima calls male pattern violence. And just the issues that we as women who have been, what you say, born into this world of male supremacy have had to deal with our entire lives. So before we get into this show about the Veterans for Peace, and they made a statement about transgender issues, and you all are trying to get questions answered from VFP as members of VFP, and you haven't been able to get a response from them. We'll address that, but I want you, before we get too deeply into it, to introduce yourself. So Cheryl, please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Cindy. So I have a lot to say about who I am, but in terms of this conversation, as it relates to the anti-war movement and being a woman in it, I was a managing editor for 5 years with Op-Ed News, and during that time, I served as the point person for Veterans for Peace, promoting their campaigns, publishing their articles. And as a photojournalist, I covered numerous VFP actions in Philadelphia and D.C., and I've been a long-time ally in that regard, and I'm a state member of Veterans for Peace. During my time in the anti-war movement is really when I came to develop a class analysis around women as a class, and I've become acutely aware that sexism and misogyny is alive and well among people on the left, and that's not something that people generally want to talk about, and so that's why I'm here.
Okay, perfect. Lisa Blank?
Hey, thanks, Cindy, for having us. I'm an associate member of Veterans for Peace. I'm an activist. I've been involved with Code Pink, Military Families Speak Out, and also had a chapter of the National Organization of Women. I've worked locally with peace and social justice and also with immigration rights. I have been in the healthcare industry, and I have recently left healthcare because of the it's just not fun anymore, let me put it that way. And I have moved full-time to Mexico. And number one, I am a woman, I am a feminist, and I care about the future of our planet, and specifically the direction that my granddaughters are going in, and your granddaughters too.
Right. Lisa, you're so lucky to move to Mexico, by the
way. What? I am telling you, it's been just such an experience. I mean, just day-to-day life. I get up every morning and I purify my water, you know? I mean, that's day one.
Yeah. Well, we do too, because where I live in California, we have a drought. And this is for another show, but our water levels are so low that they have dangerous levels of hexavalent chloride or chlorine, and that's so we have to get we have to have purified water now too. So we join you, and I just want to say before we have Anita Stewart introduce herself, is that you? I just want to say that. All three of you, I've worked with you all. I consider you my friends. And I've never said Cindy Sheehan's soapbox was, non-biased, because I always have an opinion about these things. And I just want to right away tell my listeners that I'm on your guys' side. This is a friendly interview. It's not going to be an oppositional
Thank
interview.
Thank you, Cindy. It's a nice respite from the hostility we've received.
So this is kind of a support group for all of us, because, you know, even my mild support of you, I've received a lot of hostility. But Anita, go ahead, Anita, and introduce yourself. My listeners will know that I've been on Anita's show several times. She's also a broadcaster.
Yes, I'm Anita Stewart. I live outside of Tampa, Florida. I currently produce and have created two different shows, Wise Women Media and Challenging the Rhetoric. And those are both operational. I took a brief respite this year. I am a VSP member, a longtime member. I'm also a veteran, and I worked 4 years as active duty military intelligence, and I'm also a military widow. I've also worked on three presidential campaigns and was locally elected here in the Tampa area. And speaking of water, we're working on water issues here in Florida, which also are very critical, and that is definitely another show, and trying to stop the fracking that is planned to take place in the Everglades. So I do quite a lot of other part-time things, like write for rock music publications, and I'm currently living with CLL leukemia. So definitely want to legalize medical marijuana in this state.
Okay, great.
And of course, I have worked with Sandy Oestreich, who lives down here, who has the website to pass ERA.
Yay, Sandy.
So I think it's very, very important to know that we do not have equal rights until that ERA amendment is ratified in all states.
Okay, perfect. So let's start with a statement that Veterans for Peace made recently about transgender issues. And Cheryl, why don't you talk about that statement and then the feminist definition of gender?
Okay. Well, the interesting thing about this statement that Veterans for Peace put forth was that it came so quickly. In June, there was a social media discussion, and you know how those can go sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And the issue was the issue of gender and there are different theories of gender. Some of us were discussing in terms of how we approach gender as women, as females. We don't conflate sex and gender, okay? We understand that sex, that is female, male, intersex, that is the biological state. You know, humans are a sexually dimorphic species. And in terms of gender, we view that as a patriarchal social construct, okay, in which females from birth are socialized to be feminine, or you could call it submissive, and males are socialized to be masculine or dominant. And that gendering process that every one of us on this call has experienced since the time we were born is oppressive to girls and women. So we recognize that it's a brutal socialization and that continues into adulthood. And we support people who want to break free of those sexist gender roles. They're not real. They're not innate. We're not born feminine and we're born masculine. This is forced upon us. So we support people who want to break free of gender. We consider ourselves gender abolitionists, and our concern is people who want to reify the stereotypes, and we believe that queer theory does that. So this was a kind of conversation that was happening on social media. A group of people who support queer theory saw this conversation, participated in it, and because it was people, Veterans for Peace, involved in this discussion, this group contacted Veterans for Peace and demanded that they take a stand against what we were saying.
Right.
And so there were 2 weeks of emails back and forth between this group and a few people on the Executive Committee of Veterans for Peace. And within 2 weeks, they came forward with this transgender position statement without speaking to any women who had concerns about how these politics and policies are going to affect girls and women. And when you look at the statement, There are things that are in there that say, that affirm the rights and humanity of trans-identified people, and we certainly do too. We're concerned for anybody who is discriminated against. But in the statement, it makes comments like trans misogyny behavior and remarks will not be accepted. Well, we don't know what that means.
Right.
So we drafted, and we can get into it more later, a letter asking for clarification on a lot of the things that are in this statement. And to date, they have refused to answer our questions about that. And we ask that they withdraw a resolution that they're talking about until we can have this conversation, and they've refused to do that.
Well, we... I will link the statement. I will link your letter. We're not going to read the full statement or read your full letter because, you know, that'll be long, but there'll be a link to it. And before we go on to queer theory with Lisa, I just want you to, for my listeners, to, you know, define two terms that you use in your explanation. Define sexually dimorphic and gender abolitionist.
Okay, well, the sexually dimorphic, I'm not a scientist, but we are a sexually dimorphic species. It's about our reproduction state. Not all females can reproduce, not all males can reproduce. But there is a differentiation among males and females.
Let me step in here, if you don't mind, Cheryl. I always quote Special Snowflake, who is a trans woman who has a wonderful blog, and I really like Special Snowflake. The way that in one article they had described it as males are born with male gametes, which are reproductive cells. Females are born with female gametes. Some people are born intersex and they have an anomaly with their gametes or their reproductive cells. Some females are born sterile, but they're still female. Some males are born sterile, but they're still male. So that came from a trans woman who has a wonderful blog, and that's kind of explains dimorphic. We are our gametes, G-A-M-E-T-E-S, which is our reproductive cells, the basis of our biologic function.
All right, yeah, that's what I was trying to get at. Dimorphic, you know, two. There's di means two, right? And so, so then gender, and when you all speak, please identify yourself. So that was Lisa. So
yes, thank you.
Let's talk about being gender abolitionists. Whoever wants to take that one and identify yourself.
Okay, well, Cheryl? This is Cheryl. when I say gender abolitionist, I speak about that in terms because we believe that gender is a social construct. It's not innate. Females are not born wanting to wear pretty dresses and focus on makeup and such things, you know, and boys simply born wanting to play rough and tumble, you know. I think that most of us here remember wanting to do, you know, get dirty and play in the dirt and climb trees and all that. And many of us may have been called tomboys. People don't want to associate that with just things that females like to do, too. But we were pressured to become something that, you know, we're not. You can't look at a billboard or open a magazine or turn on the TV without seeing what females are expected to be and to do. So that's what we want to really rid this world of that, of that gender construct, because what it does is it feeds into male supremacy. It creates situations where women are submissive and males are dominant. So we want to break free of that.
I had a situation we're talking about social media, on my Facebook wall where there was some kind of ruckus being raised because Chelsea Manning couldn't grow her hair long in prison. So I was saying, well, you know, I have short hair. Does that mean I'm not a woman? And
exactly.
So people went crazy on me, you know.
Well, right. You have
the choice, Cindy. You can grow your hair long or your hair short. And I was like, but, you know, she's in prison, and I'm sure, you know, some men like to have long hair, too. Does that mean that they're, you know, that...
Some men like pink.
Yeah, so I just...
And that's okay.
And so that's what gets me about transgender, is that I think, and we all think that everybody has a right to be whomever they want to be.
And
they have the right to safety, and that's all we're asking. We're asking for safety for women and girls in this male supremacist world, and safety for transgender people too. But what I'm seeing is like when somebody like Caitlyn Jenner transitions, she transitions into a Barbie supermodel. Mm-hmm. Why I rarely wear makeup. I have short hair. I have you know, I wear protest shirts, t-shirts all the time. So does that mean in their world I'm not really a woman?
Well,
gender is confusing.
some of us have been told by trans-identified people that they're more women than we ever will be.
Because I have been told that many times.
Yeah, many times.
This is Lisa.
And really, that's just insulting to females, because it's saying that it's attention to makeup and to 6-inch heels makes a woman, and that's troubling. That's troubling. If a male wants to wear a dress and long hair, go for it. You know, I don't have an issue with that, but that doesn't mean woman. That's what I have an issue with.
This is Anita. Let me jump in and just say, we as women, we get to define what a woman is to each of us, and how and what makes us feel like woman. But why are those parameters different when coming from anyone else?
I really have, this is Lisa, I don't really know what it feels like to be a woman. So I'm always confused when people say, well, I have always felt like a woman. I don't exactly know what that means. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't really feel like a woman, you know. I mean, I feel like me.
It's subjective.
So pardon me?
It's subjective.
It's stereotypes. You know, when people say, I feel like a woman, they're talking in the gender stereotypes that we're trying to get rid of. I feel fragile. I feel weak. I feel feminine. I feel pretty. I feel frilly. I feel pink. That's all the stuff we're trying to get rid of. There is no such thing as feeling like a woman.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't get it. I just don't understand.
Yeah, this is Cheryl, and this is something that we included in our letter on that particular issue, that we were born female into a male supremacist world. We survived girlhood in a male supremacist world. We've earned our right to claim and define woman.
Absolutely.
Many of us haven't survived. Many of us are really struggling as females in this world. We don't believe woman is a feeling. You know, we're survivors of, and we struggle within the sex caste called female. It's, you know, if you apply class analysis, which I know, Cindy, that, you know, that's something that you're deeply familiar with, and that's how we're looking at this, is that, you know, that female is a class of people. A woman is an adult female.
And what queer theory does, this is Lisa now, queer theory is the opposite of that. Queer theory actually elevates gender identity, what you feel like, over biologic sex. So it doesn't make any difference if you're male-bodied or female-bodied. If you feel like a woman, you are a woman. A woman is whatever a man defines it as, is basically what we've been saying. And queer theory elevates gender identity to the level of race, color, religion, and national origin that is all protected under the Civil Rights Act of 1964. What wasn't covered in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is sex. The Equal Rights Amendment was supposed to protect females, obviously, and Anita is the expert on the ERA, but that has still not been passed. Right now, we have the Equality Act that's racing through Congress, and it is written under the laws of queer theory, elevating gender identity over biologic sex. If the Equality Act passes, women will still not have the civil rights granted everybody else since 1964. Not everyone agrees with queer theory. Not everybody believes that how you feel negates sex segregation. Sex segregation is established for the protection of females because there is such a thing as male pattern violence. Cindy, your friend Mickey is right. Male violence exists. And we believe, I strongly believe, that at the basis of queer theory is the inability for human beings, for whatever reason, to say male violence exists. Sex segregation will get rid of that safety net that girls and women have in vulnerable spaces. And anyone who feels like a woman today will have access. And women are still not protected. So queer theory and the Equality Act that goes along with it and is written in queer theory terms will still not protect females. And when Veterans for Peace put up a trans misogyny statement, before they put up a misogyny statement after being asked for years and years and years to do so, that's the reason why we're here today. That's the reason why we've gone public. Sex does still count. Women are still subordinate to males. Male violence exists. It is men that are killing. It is men that are dangerous. And something that I don't want to get all the way into, but I will briefly touch, in 2011, there was a Swedish study done. As you know, Sweden has done sex reassignment surgeries since forever. They published the results of a 30-year study, and it tracked criminal violence in people who had sex reassignment surgery, and it found out, guess what? Males to female carry the same amount of criminal violence as males. So having that sex reassignment surgery, you still contain male violence. Born males will still carry that male violence. The truth of the matter is, we're not really afraid of transgendered people using our bathrooms. We are more afraid of men who, because they are predators, invading our public spaces. And I think that that's a really important point. Sex segregation is around for a reason, and it is around to protect females from male violence. Queer theory negates sex segregation with gender identity. And that's harmful, harmful.
I'm going to ask a question. I don't know who wants to take this, but so I have been accused since I supported your letter in your quest for answers from Veterans for Peace. I've been like compared to, a Jim Crow. So I want separate but equal, and so that's exactly like the Jim Crow laws. Can one of you take that?
I'd like to finish that up because it kind of goes into queer theory.
Okay.
Because if you are elevating gender identity to the level of race, color, religion, and national origin, which is what it is doing, queer theory equates those who don't agree with queer theory as perpetrators of irrational bigotry and hatred, and we have all experienced it. And Cindy, you've seen it in the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We're subject to silencing, harassment. I've had both rape and death threats for wanting to abolish gender. Lies are told about us and spread on the internet. Even our feminist history has been altered and is being changed into queer theory. Stonewall, instead of being butch lesbians and drag queens and gay men, it is now gay men and transgendered individuals who started Stonewall.
Mm-hmm.
So again, our feminist history, we call it our herstory, has been altered many times, but queer theory is also altering it now. People have been doxxed online. I know a woman whose children, the faces of her children were published on Facebook and the bus stop that they go to. Lies have been told, all because we don't agree with their definition of gender. Everyone is entitled to live a life free of violence and be who they want. That is a human right. No one gives you that. It belongs to us. But queer theory does not ask females for respect. It demands our total submission, and that's what we're fighting.
And in terms of the Jim Crow thing, I think what's missing from that, Cindy, is that females are, in fact, a class analysis. We are an oppressed group. We enter a war zone when we're born as females.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you are a female, you know that your restriction that you're restricted in your movement in society. Rape is a form of terrorism, and it controls every one of us. And that's not even to mention, you know, the issue of wage discrepancies and all that, everything that goes with it. You know, we don't have control of our bodies. So we, you know, as an oppressed group, we have a right to organize separately from the oppressor. So it blows my mind when somebody's going to bring into some, you know, that this is about a you know, Woolworth lunch counter. You know what I'm saying? We when we're talking about Veterans for Peace, and Anita can probably speak to this, we're talking about female soldiers who are coming home, who one in three women in the military, as you know, suffer from sexual assault by their male counterparts. Now, these women have a right to have some space away from males. You, Cindy, I'm remembering when you did your Tour de Peace in 2013. Mm-hmm. Remember that sign you pulled down from, yes, 29 Palm Marine Base?
Yes.
What did it say?
Oh, gosh.
Hide your daughters. Hide your daughters. Hide your wife. We're back in town. Now, you know, females didn't write that, right? And they didn't hang that on the thing. That's males. And so the women who've been in, on these bases, who have fought alongside these men, that's the culture that they were subjected to the whole time in the military. So for them to come out and not have the right to establish boundaries in consciousness-raising groups, in healing groups, in organizing groups, that's what we're very concerned about. And there are other women who wrote this letter with us, and they're women who have not felt safe speaking out publicly because of the threats that Lisa talked about, but also because of just their own trauma that they've been through. They don't want to, you know, have to be exposed to more violence. But this has been a huge concern among women within the Veterans for Peace, that we don't want, here we've got an executive board that's all male, an executive director that's male, and what they're basically doing with this statement is holding the door open, forcing the door open to female-only space and ushering in whoever they choose can be ushered in.
And why weren't women considered? Why did they ignore our pleas for a statement to end misogyny? I mean, this has been going on. They have never addressed it. You know, Peace at Home. This is Lisa again. Peace at Home is one of their big campaigns. Peace at Home is about domestic violence. Peace at Home is about the femicide of women that's happening in this country. We've been, you know, I've never been...
Hello?
Hello?
I think we just lost Lisa.
The website, I'm telling you, it's a misogynist paradise out there.
Well, let me go.
Would it be okay if I address that? Lisa mentioned the Peace at Home. May I address that? Because I have this statement from Veterans for Peace in front of me.
Okay.
In this past winter, Veterans for Peace, I think, did a really wonderful thing. You know, with the uprising in Ferguson, the militarization against people of color, communities of color, Veterans for Peace stepped up and said, you know, we can't pretend this isn't happening. And what they've done is created a new lens in which they're connecting the struggle for peace at home with its mission to end war abroad. They call it Peace at Home, Peace Abroad. And they recognize, and this is their wording, ending war must include ending all manifestations, both at home and abroad. They say VFP understands that, quote, racism is a driving force for modern war and dehumanization and is central in fighting war. Right on. It absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they go on to say, we have that same responsibility to confront all forms of bias. They continue in this statement to talk about participating in Pride events, speaking out against anti-immigration policies, standing in solidarity with the oppressed, talking about the poor, about environmental issues, and rightfully connecting it with war. Michael McPherson, VFT's executive director, said, if we don't believe in peacemaking here at home, I'm not sure our rhetoric about peace is real. Well, what's missing?
Right.
What's
women.
Missing from the statement, right? What oppressive group is it talked about here? When they say violence is on our doorstep, should we turn our back and pretend it's not happening? Now, we know, and Veterans for Peace knows, that within the organization itself, we're not talking about down the street, we're talking about within the organization, there has been a history of sexual harassment against female by male staff members. We know that there's been male violence against members. There's a current issue that's going on right now that I'm reluctant to go into detail with, but Veterans for Peace will know what I'm talking about in terms of male violence against women by
physical violence.
Leadership. Women's voices are marginalized. It's been brought to their attention time and time again from women within the organization and by leaders of other organizations within our coalition. So not once does this lengthy statement mention male violence against women, but check this out, Cindy. They conclude with this in their statement. They say the issues are not separate, and the mother of them all is violence, militarization, and war. Did you hear that?
The mother.
Am I allowed to curse on your show?
No, you're not.
I just snorted.
My engineer would be mad if we use curse words. So
after completely ignoring the war on women and females as an oppressed class, they have the nerve to say that the mother of all these issues is violence. I mean, if that's yes. the father of all slaps in the face, I don't know what it is.
So I wanted to...
This is Anita. I wanted to mention...
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
Because I was going to go to you right now. So it just, before I asked you the question I was going to ask you, Anita, it reminds me of that John Lennon song, "Woman is the quote-unquote nigger of the world." And the only someone like John Lennon could use that word, but it just shows our second class position and VFP's answer to people, women who say, why haven't you included, anti-female misogyny in your platform or whatever, they say, well, that's included in our equality, and everybody should be treated with respect or whatever. But like you said, you've been trying for years to get VFP to recognize that women should be safe and feel safe to express themselves, feel safe to attend without being sexually harassed or sexually assaulted. But then when the transgender activists go to them, it only takes a couple weeks for them to make a statement. So, but Anita, I'm looking at the letter that you three put together, and you're not the only ones who wrote it. There were many female veterans and others who had input on it, but they were afraid to put their names to it because of the backlash, and there certainly has been backlash. So I commend your courage in putting your name to this letter. But there in your letter, you talk about how this man, when a female veteran put out that 1 in 3 women are sexually assaulted in the military, and it really is as much as 90% are sexually harassed, and not assault is one thing, but there's also sexual harassment. That he accused her of, using a female logic. Now, how can female logic and emotions? To me, that's like, it's a statistic. That's not an emotional right. thing. It's a statistic. So, Anita, as a veteran yourself, can you speak to that?
I can speak to that from personal experience when I was active duty. I mean, I've been looking at these two articles that were really good, and then I'll relate it personally. There was one article called Women Who Risked Everything to Expose Sexual Assault in the Military. That came out from Mother Jones on September 8th and last fall. A great article. It's kind of like a photo essay. And then the other article came out in the Military Times, December 5th last year, Incidents of Rape in Military Much Higher Than Previously Reported. One of the statistics that they mentioned in the first paragraph of the first article, women in the U.S. military are being raped and sexually assaulted by their colleagues in record numbers. Keep in mind here, that statement is talking about raped and sexually assaulted. It's not talking about sexual harassment,
right,
which is a whole other different statistic. An estimated 26,000 rapes and sexual assaults took place in the military in 2012. It's almost impossible to get current numbers on these stats. The last year, even from the VA website, the last year the statistic is available was 2012. Only 1 in 7 victims reported their attacks, and just 1 in 10 of those cases went to trial. So I can tell you personally, as an active duty person, I was stationed overseas. It was probably my first couple months there. I had a new supervisor that came in country, and he wanted to show me who was boss. So on some fluke or for some reason, he came over to my house. It was on the premise to give me some paperwork that I needed to fill out. And as he sat in my living room, he took off his clothes.
Whoa.
And after that particular incident, it was, I can tell you, honestly, it was almost 3 years of hell being under his, under him as a supervisor. Everything was relegated to sexual harassment. I was very grateful that I was not one of the statistics that was raped, but you never heard about those rapes happening, even though I knew that they were. I didn't know anyone personally, or they weren't telling me anything about it. But in any case, many, many of us were sexually harassed. And this was part of the culture of being active duty in the military. A lot of us women went in because we needed money for college. We wanted a career. It seemed like a great way to get both. We had, at the time I went in, it was 1 woman to 8 men. Uh-huh. That was the statistics. I was working in a career field that was mostly men. Women were almost unheard of in that career field. And here I was, totally sexually harassed almost every single day that I was on the job. And at the time, I could not talk about it to anyone because I was afraid of recriminations against me. So how many women out there have been silenced is the big question.
I just want to share an experience with you, because I'm thinking these statistics translate to the civilian world also. Yeah. You know, it's not just the military. Yeah. But when I was in eighth grade, I was put in a situation where I was put into a metal shop. And at that time, boys took metal shop and wood shop, and girls took home economics, right? But I was in a mentally gifted minors program. And so we all took metal shop, all the mentally gifted minors. And the metal shop teacher actually fondled me. He fondled my vagina.
Gosh.
He fondled my breasts. He would come up behind me when I was working at a machine and put his penis in my butt. And so I went to a trusted teacher. And he was the male PE teacher. And they both came up to me at lunch and told me that if I told anybody, they would know that I was lying.
And that, fear.
Yeah. And so it traumatized me, of course. Mm-hmm. And then I go back to my old town, and there's a basketball whatever, named after the coach who attacked me with the metal shop teacher. And so I think that we, like you said, we are all survivors of this male supremacist society. And, you know, not just females sometimes, but also other males, because Casey, my son, was harassed in the military for being a virgin.
Absolutely. And the perpetrators are always male.
That's right.
Right.
And within Veterans for Peace, right now, as far as my understanding, there's no policy in place. And I'm watching it play out right now with a woman who I've been speaking with closely to for the last 9 months, maybe, who has been attempting to get Veterans for Peace to address an issue of violence against her by somebody who is in a position of leadership. Without going into too much detail, it's been handled horribly. And we know when, you know, as you talked about, Cindy, going through that experience and then, you know, being dismissed, your voice not being heard, that affects you later when you go into new situations. Is that going to happen to me all over again?
Right.
You know, being degraded, being ignored. And so the women who are dealing with this among their peers in Veterans for Peace have probably all had a story like that. So they're reluctant to go to anybody about it. We've heard stories about women, you know, saying to men in VSP, hey, this happened to me. And because it's one of their buddies, right, they say, oh, I wish you didn't tell me that, right? There's that code, that brotherhood code in Veterans for Peace, wish you didn't tell me that.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say that I've worked very closely with VFP, and there are some wonderful men in the organization, like your friend, I don't know if we want to say his name, who these transgender activists tried to get fired because he was, you know, speaking out against that statement.
Yeah. There are some great men in VFP. There's great men everywhere.
Right.
We all have them in our lives,
and
you know.
And it's important to note that.
Absolutely.
And in talking about that, this is another problem because, you know, we all have friends, male friends and Veterans for Peace. One of us may be partnered with one of them.
Yes.
And many of the men who do speak out for women face their own struggle. And recently, around this issue of the transgender statement, have been silenced. They've been silenced.
Yep.
And it's not just
women.
And that was part of the catalyst for us writing this letter to say, you know what, this is it. We got to, this is, you know, we're speaking out. It's got to go public because we can't keep having these private conversations. And what's happening when we put out the letter, we've had an enormous response from people messaging us. They don't want to talk about it out loud, but saying thank you. And what's happening is consciousness raising, like they did in the 70s, you know, it's making a comeback. So Veterans for Peace should take note because stories are coming out and we're hearing more and more about how systemic this is and it needs to be addressed. And I think that's what, you know, when we saw this transgender statement, and believe me, everyone here wants trans-identified people to be safe. They are at risk. We are concerned about that. And what we want is for Veterans for Peace to recognize that male violence is the worst problem in the world. And that they need to provide, to ensure that everyone is safe. I mean, you can only do so much. But to put forward a statement which has language in it that most people don't understand or agree with, and then not explain it to us, refuse to explain the terminology, like, you know, and in telling us that we can't engage in certain behavior or make certain remarks, because then it will be transmisogynist, but not define what that means.
Our theory on gender is 40 years old. It wasn't invented yesterday, and it wasn't invented as a reaction to queer theory. Our gender theory has existed since the late 60s, early 70s. It is a deep part of feminism that women are oppressed based on our biologic reality.
Well, let me just, we're running out of time, and this has been a fascinating discussion that I feel very honored to be part of. But when I came out with my support of you all, I was called a transphobic hate monger. And now the whole anti-war movement is irrelevant because I came out in support of you. But
you have a lot of power.
I know. Gosh, I didn't know that. And so it's the mother.
Everybody
of
go
all...
home. The anti-war movement is over. So
yeah,
Cindy's
I just
want to
say it's the mother of all hate mongering violence that I put. You know,
no,
it's just it's just ridiculous. It's just even too ridiculous to
it's not irrational bigotry. It's not irrational hatred. It's it's real, and people are so afraid to speak, and we're rushing legislation not only in VFP but also throughout our country, putting gender identity over sex segregation. And all we want is for people to slow down and listen. Let's look at women. Let's look at females. Are we safe? And it's not trans individuals that we're fearful of. It's male violence. It's people. It's the guy that lives across the street that puts on a dress. He has no idea. He's not trans. He is a perpetrator, but he invades vulnerable spaces to get to girls and women. And we need to address this. We need to talk about it. Our silence is deafening, and we're all going to pay for this this 1 hour that we spent. I guarantee it. All of us are going to. As soon as this show airs, we're all going to hear about it. And we knew that.
Predators aside, even for in terms of, you know, if at a convention a group of females decide to have a workshop where they just want female only people there, there may be a trans woman who wants to come in, and no one's saying that they are a predator. But what we're saying is, for somebody who's born male, who's socialized male, who was indoctrinated in the military as a male, which is a completely different indoctrination than females experience, those women who want to have that safe space have a right to it, because, you know, the women who are in domestic violence shelters, in rape crisis centers, you know, they don't need to be triggered. You know, I'm not big on the word triggered, but they don't need to be triggered by the presence of a male-bodied person in a place where they're desperately needing to feel safe. And the issue that we raise in this letter about Veterans for Peace is a call for equality, and the act that Lisa mentioned, the H.R. 3185, the Equality Act, where they are essentially going to seeking to have gender identity take predominance over sex. So, you know, issues like Title IX. Title IX was created and fought hard by women so that, you know, it prohibits discrimination based on sex in federally funded programs and activities.
Right.
And now, with gender identity, if somebody goes in and says, "Well, I feel like a woman," you know, that's going to supersede sex as a class, and that's a serious issue. And we just want to know, has Veterans for Peace considered that? And if they have considered that, how do they reconcile that with what their statement is saying? These are things that they need to discuss with us.
I just flashed back to many years ago. I was giving a speech, and in it, I must have talked about patriarchy and matriarchy, because the president of VFP at the time was at the speech, and he's since passed away, and he came up to me and said, I shouldn't talk about that because it dilutes my message. So I So I was just
So universal and so subliminal. Sexism and misogyny is built into every single one of us. Even myself, I still, every once in a while, I'll still snap to a judgment where I'll, blonde, you know, right. Just these things that are, it's so subliminal and so universal. I have internalized misogyny. We all do. It's like racism. It is bred into us from the second we are born, and recognizing it takes work.
Absolutely. Well, I just want, before we sign off, I'd like to go over this terminology that became new to me recently. I mean, not just like since your letter came out, but fairly recently, is that now we are all TERFs or something like that.
Can somebody talk about that? TERF stands for trans exclusionary radical feminist. Anyone who does not agree with queer theory is called a TERF, a trans exclusionary radical feminist. You don't even have to be a feminist to be called a TERF. It's just a big slur. Some gender abolitionists have embraced it and just say, yeah, I guess I'm a TERF. Kill me, you know, what am I supposed to say next? I don't like it. I don't use it. It is a slur, and it is a tool of silencing that is used by activists. If you have been TERFed, forget it. No one is going to listen to you, and the conversation shuts down. It happens on social media all the time. You're a TERF. Don't listen to her. And, well, it doesn't make any difference if I'm quoting statistics. She's a TERF. Don't listen. Well, no. You know, these are stats off the transgender, off the Transgender Day of Remembrance website. No, don't listen to her. She's a TERF.
Mm-hmm. And the other, this is Anita, and the other statement is you're a hater. Yeah. That is the other statement that will silence on social media.
Yep. Nobody wants to be called a bigot. You know, nobody wants to be called a bigot. And, and so if you... You know, I know women who don't identify as feminine, and sometimes they'll say just to make the slightest utterance of questioning, you know, the Caitlyn Jenner issue, right? And immediately, you know how social media is, immediately people gather around and, you know, basically call them a witch. You know what I'm saying? TERF is like a witch. It's a slur, and it's used to shut people up. And so, anytime you hear that, you know it's a silencing technique. Women didn't make that word up.
Right.
You know, it's like bitch, it's like whore, it's like everything else that just is used to shut us up and to marginalize us. So it's not legitimate.
Well, I just want to, like, one more thing to address. I was immediately told. It's like amazing that, like, immediately after my statement of support was published on your Women's Alliance page, which will be shared from my newsletter, and I will share the comments on the newsletter because I don't think we'll have time to read them right now, the comments in support, I was told that I have invalidated all of my work for Chelsea Manning. All of the thousands of dollars I raised for her defense, I rode my bike from California to Maryland to attend the court martial. I was there several days in support. So because I, support your quest for answers and your analysis that everything I've done for her is just invalidated now. But to me, it seems like how come her gender struggle has superseded everything that she worked for to expose. And now she's a political prisoner, and we're not talking about the military-industrial complex and the violence of this empire anymore. We're talking about her gender issues, and those supersede the millions of people who have been killed or tortured and countries ruined and oppression now. We're not talking about that. Right. We're talking about she can't grow her hair long.
Right.
Right. But I'm not concerned with Private Manning's hair. You know what I'm saying? But when somebody does that, when you criticize gender or queer theory, and people in the anti-war movement say, you know, all of a sudden say, you're irrelevant because of, you know, Manning. Well, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. We've heard that a lot.
We can support Private Manning as a political prisoner without being forced. They're trying to take our language from us. We don't have to support Private Manning, we don't have to say, oh yeah, I believe that's a female person.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that required of us?
Right.
Why are we expected to suspend disbelief about human biology to support a political prisoner? We don't have to.
Perfect.
Absolutely. We're not being asked for respect. We're being asked for submission.
Well, I just want to thank you all for this wonderful discussion and for bringing this issue of male pattern violence to the forefront where it needs to be. And it just is amazing to me how many born women still are so involved in attacking. Well, they're like Lisa said, she still has this, you know, sometimes these feelings, and we all do. But it's just an important issue, and how you know, even being shut down by saying she's just a mother, we don't have to listen to her.
Right.
You know, how can she be smart if she's just a mother? You know, George Soros and Michael Moore must be telling her what to say, because you know, how could a mother, you know, have sophisticated analysis of empire? I don't know how many, and that just offends me so much. That probably offends me more than, you know, the death threats I've gotten, is people question my intelligence because I'm just a woman mother.
Absolutely.
So this is a great discussion, and it was far too short. But is there anything else that any of you would like to add before? I don't really have any time constraints on my broadcast, but I know we all have lives we have to get back to. Is there any?
The only thing that I would like to say in closing is that instead of using silencing terms, if you hear someone with a different aspect of gender, listen to what they're saying and don't be afraid. There is nothing hateful. There is nothing bigotry. There is no bigotry or hatred involved in being a gender abolitionist. It's about loving women. And they are attempting to shut us down so that there is only one point of view. There is another point of view. Many people share it with us, but they're so frightened to admit it.
Right. And veterans, and I'll add to that, the Veterans for Peace acknowledges that they are a broad front organization. You know, you've got people with all kinds of political persuasions in there. People that have different, you know, Marxists, communists, liberals, progressives, right? So, you know, here's another issue where we're only allowed to commit to one theory.
Right.
And that's what our biggest concern is. That's the silencing that's in this transgender statement that Veterans for Peace has put out. It is silencing women's voices. And that's, to me, huge. And I just hope people can hear that in our message, that we're not telling anybody else how to think, but we have a right to think and to express ourselves and to move about freely in movement work and not be afraid to speak out unless Veterans for Peace tells us it's not acceptable and we need to shut up.
We have all worked with trans individuals. I've worked with them in D.C. with Code Pink. There's a trans woman that I work with locally that I had worked locally with in Phoenix. We're not saying that every single time we go out of the house, we want to make sure that we can be in female-only spaces. None of us are separatists.
Right.
However, there are times that we do want to be able to hold the sanctity of female-only spaces. We have all organized with trans individuals, probably more often than we ever know.
Right.
And that's not the problem.
Exactly.
And this is Anita. I don't think we should ever lose sight of our, you know, putting our eyes on the prize and never stop talking about empire and what Veterans for Peace and other organizations formed to do. And I think that a lot of these, how can I say, campaigns to hate, and they call them hate, and they call us haters. No, we don't hate, we love.
Right.
And we want to definitely hold our sisters in a special place, especially those who have been wounded and have come back to the world from wherever they were in the service, wherever. And they're, and even those that have not been in the service, but that have been wounded to the core. And they need those spaces for their own healing and for their own self-healing. And it's important.
And Cindy is not irrelevant. And we need to be wary of people who come out swinging with language like that, because that's divisive. That's divisive.
Right.
And you know what's behind that? I don't know, but I think that people need to. And what I am expecting to happen, because I've been having more and more conversations, is I think that the more people speak out, like you have, Cindy, and hosting this conversation, I'm hearing from more people who understand what we're saying. And, you know, are they going to start saying that about and other leaders and other people that, oh, they're just making it, they're irrelevant, they're haters, it's not, you know, at some point, you know, there's it's not going to be accepted. They've been able to bully a lot of women, but
a lot of women,
well, right?
Yeah. I mean, bullying women is like a millennia old.
It's national pastime.
Yeah, for sure.
Worldwide.
Can I get somebody to say where the letter can be found in case somebody comes through the show, not through the newsletter?
They can go, this is Anita, they can go to thewomansalliance.blogspot.com.
Okay, great. And like I said, I will post it and comments and relevant things on the newsletter. And I just want to thank Cheryl Byron, Lisa Blank, and Anita Stewart for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And I just, again, want to iterate my support for get answers, to be treated with respect, and to keep this very important conversation going.
Yeah.
Because it's not a narrow issue. It's a very widespread. When we come talk about male pattern violence and being socialized in that our entire lives, it's an issue that needs to be addressed.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, comrades.
Thank you.
As we say, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Cindy. You're the best.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
That's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for this week. As always, I hope you were informed and inspired. And please go to thewomensalliance.blogspot.com and check out the letter and check out all the information that Lisa and Cheryl and Anita shared with us. I really hope that this was as enlightening and powerful for you as it was for me. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, my assistant emeritus, Dee Dee Miller. I'd like to thank my guests, Lisa Blank, Cheryl Byron, and Anita Stewart. And I'd like to thank you for listening to and supporting Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Yep, you can reach me at cindysheehansoapbox@gmail.com. I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of response to the show. I hope that it is critical, and I hope that it is respectful. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.